VilGrow Philippines is a gender-smart impact incubator and investor. VilGrow funds and mentors innovative social enterprises that are building solutions to improve the life of the poor. Set up in 2001, VilGrow has supported over 400 social enterprises in India and is now taking its unique incubation model and knowledge of building a social enterprise ecosystem to Southeast Asia. Priya Tachadi is co-founder and CEO at VilGrow Philippines. So hello, Priya. We're very happy and we're very honored to have you here at Startup Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. The pleasure is all mine. I'm very excited to be here and share a little bit more about what we do. And yeah, and hopefully there'll be some people listening who are interested in what we do and how we support entrepreneurs.
Yes, we're very excited to learn more about VilGrow, and especially this March is Women's Month. So we can talk about VilGrow Philippines being a gender smart impact incubator. So let's start with a question. What really is VilGrow Philippines?
Yeah, so VilGrow Philippines, you know, we are, as you said, a gender smart impact incubator. And what that really means is that we are really in the business of helping entrepreneurs succeed. And our focus is really to support entrepreneurs who are building enterprises or building businesses that have a direct social or a climate impact. So we work, you know, we apply that lens of, and we're really looking for those entrepreneurs who are daring to dream to solve these huge issues that we have today. Of course, over the last sort of 3 years, we've very actively taken a gender smart approach. We apply a gender lens, you know, throughout our work, and I'll talk more about what that means. But yes, you know, I came here to the Philippines about 6 years ago to set up VilGrow, and we kind of got started in 2019. And it's been a phenomenal journey so far. And I'm really a believer that, you know, entrepreneurship and market-driven models can really be a catalyst to solve social problems. And so we do our best to find those entrepreneurs who have that vision, and we do our best to support them and help them succeed.
Yeah, I think VilGrow Philippines really has a bold mission, like really, driving impact, I mean, social entrepreneurship, social impact, and helping social enterprises. I think it's a bold mission. I think it's a very brave advocacy as well. But VilGrow started in India and then now building VilGrow Philippines. So can we just know about, like, maybe there are like similarities or maybe differences between India and the Philippines? I mean, why take the model that was built previously back in 2001 in India to Southeast Asia and the Philippines?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, I always get asked to compare India and the Philippines. But let me start maybe a little bit with VilGrow's journey itself. So, of course, VilGrow was founded by a gentleman called Paul Basil way back in 2001, when, you know, all of these terms, honestly, the startup ecosystem or even social enterprise and all of these were like very, very new, probably not yet in the consciousness of most people. So VilGrow kind of really started out at the start of all of this kind of taking off in India itself, which has really been the hotbed for Asia, you know, for entrepreneurship in general, and especially for social entrepreneurship. So we were very fortunate to be part of that journey. We were one of the first incubators that are focused on impact in India. We were one of the very first, you know, impact investors who were giving funding to entrepreneurs, you know, building social enterprises. And we learned a lot in that journey, like, and we changed, evolved a lot as well, because we also made a lot of mistakes and learned from, you know, mistakes of those who we supported. But the vision and the mission, you know, hasn't really changed since then. It really is to help build successful, impactful businesses and backing entrepreneurs who are really daring to go out there and say, okay, we can now address, you know, these very, very big social issues through building a business model. And that was really not the norm. You know, traditionally, we think that social issues or climate issues, you know, it's only people with, you know, either the government needs to solve it, or it's really for, you know, the economy to grow, or maybe for nonprofits or only NGOs to kind of solve. But I think this whole field of impact investing in social entrepreneurship has shown that actually market-based models is a good, you know, complementary kind of way to solve these problems. And we all need to be involved in solving these problems. And that's really the genesis of VilGrow. But, you know, once we kind of, VilGrow today is very, very big in India. It's, you know, one of the biggest incubators and very kind of influential in that ecosystem. And we've supported more than 400, you know, enterprises, like you were saying. And that has actually people that we've directly funded and we've given, you know, really invest them with capital as well. But we've worked with thousands of entrepreneurs all around the country. And when we kind of got to about 15 years in our journey there in India, one of the things that, you know, I was working at Will Grow in India at that time, and we realized is that like these, we are one of the few incubators coming out of Asia from a developing country, so to speak, because most incubators that we hear of or we know of are all from the West, right? Mostly from Silicon Valley, mostly set up in, you know, Western countries. And that's what we really looked up to. But we realized that we had a body of work and we had actually supported entrepreneurs who are quite different from, in some ways, from the tech entrepreneurs that who usually kind of make all the news. And we had learned a lot about building an ecosystem. And we felt that that will be very valuable to other similar ecosystems, similar countries, you know, similar countries with the, you know, cultural issues and social issues that were similar. And actually, honestly, we started with Africa first. So we tried, we went to Kenya, where there was already quite a, you know, entrepreneurial ecosystem was already starting. And that's kind of where we started. And of course, Southeast Asia is the closest to home and probably even more similar to us in culture, the way that we think. And so it was just only a matter of time. So I moved here to the Philippines around 6 years ago, trying to understand the ecosystem. And I spent, honestly, the first year or two really just traveling around the country, meeting entrepreneurs. In my first year, I think I met more than 100 entrepreneurs, and not all of them, you know, in the big cities. I traveled a lot in Mindanao. I traveled a lot in Visayas, into smaller towns and cities to see what's happening, right? And what I saw there, and it really was for me, a revelation. I saw that young people, they're not even thinking, they're not calling themselves a social enterprise, or they're not calling themselves a tech startup. They were just thinking of ideas and solutions to the problems that they were seeing on the ground. And many of them turned out to be social and climate issues. And so 6 years ago now, like when we think there wasn't all this excitement that was happening in the startup ecosystem today, wasn't there. But I definitely saw like the sparks of what we could be. And I was very happy to then kind of take a decision to start supporting entrepreneurs in the Philippines. So today, about, I would say 80% of our work is in the Philippines and focused on building the Philippine social impact ecosystem. But 20% of our work, we're also supporting entrepreneurs across the region. But I would say the big sort of, so let's say the similarities is that, you know, when I look at the social problems and the climate issues, they're very, very similar. So if I look at a smallholder farmer, you know, in the Philippines, who is trying to make ends meet, who is stuck in poverty, who is stuck in debt cycles that they can't really get out of because of the high cost of inputs. It's not very different from the story of an Indian farmer in an Indian village who's still fighting against all of these same issues. So early recognition was that, number one, a lot of like the similar solutions that people are already trying in India could also kind of work here. So when I look at entrepreneurs here and see a lot of the solutions, we've actually already seen, you know, other entrepreneurs in India, for example, try this. Maybe they failed, maybe they succeeded. So I can see definitely, you know, a lot of the same problems that need to be solved. And culturally, socially, the kind of barriers that we have, right? Like for a young Indian, you know, at least a few years ago, if you have to tell the family that you have to become an entrepreneur, that's quite a challenge, right? Because all Asian parents want their kids to either get a stable job, a corporate job, a government job that, you know, can help maybe send your siblings to college or help with, you know, your sister's marriage or whatever it is. So culturally, again, a lot of similarities. But I think the big difference in terms of, you know, the kind of non-similarities was, I think in India, we definitely had a head start on developing the startup ecosystem and even social enterprise ecosystem. And when I came to the Philippines and, you know, even traveled around Southeast Asia, I felt that it was definitely a younger, more nascent ecosystem. And a lot of the learnings that we had in India would be relevant in building the ecosystem, in really supporting entrepreneurs, to helping models really scale up. And that was really, that's, you know, for me, the primary difference. So the Indian ecosystem today is far more mature. You know, if you're an entrepreneur in any part, right, not just in the big cities, it's still acceptable to start a business. You can, you know, maybe find local angels, or you'll find every state in India has a startup fund. You could possibly apply for it. And you're seeing entrepreneurs from all types of backgrounds. I think in the Philippines, we're still very young. I don't think the pool of, you know, entrepreneurs that you see mostly, who are most visible, are not as diverse yet, because we are still in the early days. So a lot of work to be done here, and we are very excited to be part of this ecosystem to try to help build a very inclusive ecosystem in the Philippines.
Yeah, thank you for that, for those sharings, Priya. But I think you've mentioned impact entrepreneurship. I think it's a very interesting word. So can you just dissect it a little bit? Because I think it's like social impact and like entrepreneurship and market-based models, like combining them together. Because it's true what you said, like, some Filipinos and maybe some Indians, they want to be entrepreneur like for themselves, to have to earn money for their family, for raising children, for their brothers, to spend for education. But now we have impact. So like using this tool, using entrepreneurship to provide impact. So what really is this combined? What really is like impact entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Fantastic question. And you know, this is also and I'm so happy that you asked about the mindset, right? So first of all, I would say that making money is not a bad thing. Building profitable companies is not a bad thing. The power of entrepreneurship is that, and you know, I believe this personally, and you know, through the work of Will Grow in India and now what we've been doing here in the Philippines, I've seen this, is that it is not at odds with creating social impact. And I think that is fundamentally something that, you know, we can acknowledge. It's more difficult maybe in some ways in building social impact companies, because you have to balance both. So if I were to explain it, you know, in simple terms, is that social enterprise or an impact enterprise is nothing but any other business. But the business has two goals, and both goals are equally important. One is, of course, you know, to be profitable, to grow. That still stays the same. But on the other side, and equal on the other side of the coin, you know, and you need to have both sides, right? But equally important and core to the mission of the company is to solve a social or environmental challenge. And the solution that they're developing directly creates that impact, right? So this could be, whether it could be in agriculture, it could be in affordable healthcare, it could be, you know, in clean energy, any number of sectors. But I would say the fundamental difference is that both these goals are equally important. So you don't want to, and this is very often why it takes much longer to build a social enterprise, because you're not always, you know, you're not taking the easiest path to make most of the money. You're also trying to see, okay, is this the most affordable product or service I can provide, right, to the beneficiaries or to the paying customers? Or am I taking all of these other issues into hand? So at the core of it, it really is blending both the business, the profit side, as well as creating impact. And it sounds way more simpler than the actual execution of it. But yeah. I think we have, the world has seen, you know, successful impact enterprises scale up. And I believe we can do the same here in the Philippines.
Yeah, sure. I think blending is the right word. Because if you're just a for-profit company, maybe you neglect some of this like social causes that you can actually provide for. And if you're just like an impact, not enterprise, maybe you cannot build a sustainable business model that will continue like building the company, building the business, and then continue providing impact for more people. So I think combining them is also like very important. And it's also what Willgrow is really trying to help with for this startup founders, for these entrepreneurs. So now going to Willgrow Philippines as an impact incubator. So I think that's also a very interesting word, impact incubator. So what is this, and what really does Willgrow like do, or how really does Willgrow Philippines help Filipino startup founders and entrepreneurs and social entrepreneurs or impact entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, our role in the ecosystem is really to be an intermediary. And being an incubator means, for us, you know, we have one mission, and which is really to help create successful, impactful, you know, scalable enterprises that are directly solving a social or climate issue. So impact is not a side, you know, outcome. It is a core outcome that the business is trying to solve. I think so. That's the first lens. So as an incubator, what we do is that we work with enterprises, with founders who are at the very early stages. And by early stages, I mean the earliest that we go is that sometimes we do work with idea stage companies, but most often we work with entrepreneurs who've at least worked on their solution for 6 months to a year. So, you know, so because that's where, you know, our support goes quite deep. So then it makes sense, you know, for somebody who's already been operating, even if it's for a few months. So what we do is we usually, in most of our support, we do provide a small grant that, you know, the entrepreneurs can access. But very importantly, we work in a very customized way. So we help provide access to sort of mentoring or mentors. And these are two types of mentors. I would say one is sort of the business mentor, a general business mentor who has, you know, ideally built a business themselves. So they've worked in that industry for a long time. So when they hear some of the challenges that the founders are facing, they're able to kind of, you know, be a sounding board, give advice that is practical. Right, not very high level, but we go very deep, and our mentors, it's not just a one-off mentoring. We work, you know, each mentor works with the entrepreneur over many months, if not a year, to really kind of see, because what happens is that it's nice to get advice, you know, in a conversation like this, but what happens very often for entrepreneurs is when they go out there and actually implement that advice, that's when actually a lot of problems come up. So everything sounds nice in a strategy, but when you implement, that's where we do consistent sort of continuous mentoring where, you know, you go out there, you face the problem as an entrepreneur, so you can come back and like dissect and just have, you know, a sounding board. Sure. And then, of course, we top that up with industry mentors. So, for example, if you are working in health, and you're working, you know, something specifically as neonatal care, or you're working, you know, in sexual reproductive health. So you need to kind of speak or get advice from people who understand, you know, that specific value chain or those issues at a deep level. So I think you need two types of mentors, and that's what, you know, so that's a big part. The other big challenge that we see and where we want to play a role is help the founders start thinking about, do you need, you know, financing? Do you need external financing? Do you need investments? So a lot of our focus is going specifically into some technical areas, and one of them being sort of finance and accounting. Because this is where we see a lot of startups fail. And I say across the board, not just social enterprises, because, you know, at the beginning, like the exciting part is to, and, you know, I would say that I'm also at Polar when I was companies as well. I did the same thing. Is that you're so excited with the product or the service and solving the problem that that's what you kind of pay attention to. And then the finance and admin stuff become like, you know, something that you have to do. You just delegate, you try to hire an accountant or someone in your team who does it, and you don't pay so much attention to it. And then it catches up with you eventually. So we really get quite deep into that. We, you know, try to get an accountant to sit with the founders and start fixing all of the things that they've been ignoring, or helping to set up strong financial foundations that will allow the entrepreneurs or the teams to access financing later. But we also focus on other areas like branding and communications and things like that. But at the core of it, if I were to put it, I think the main thing that we really try to do as an incubator working with early stage companies is to help test and validate the business models, right? Because it's very difficult to find support until you've proven that this works. And that is often where you need a lot of support. So the incubator's role and our role as Willgrow is to help the entrepreneurs. And, you know, as entrepreneurs, you get so deep, right? Like you become like so entrenched in what you're trying to do. And sometimes it's hard to step away and like see, okay, like where am I going wrong? Or like, what's the big picture? So that's really what the role that we want to play is, that help test and validate the business models by identifying, okay, in kind of each of the elements of your business, you know, what are the things that still need to be validated? You know, where do you think, you know, it's not working? How, for example, how do you price this product, right? So if you've priced it some way and like actually the customers are not buying it, okay, how do we change the pricing strategy? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you're taking a really long time to get your product to market. So there's some issue in your product development phase. So, you know, we really bring in the product development experts to kind of say, okay, like maybe we need to rethink this journey of getting to market. Or we help really develop very specific pilots to say, okay, we got to test this out in a real life situation with real paying customers. So we help define some of these pilots and then really just help implement and see, okay. And, you know, as I said, going back and forth to see how we can. At the end of this kind of, you know, journey with us, we really hope for two or three outcomes. And it really is, you know, is this a validated business model? Do you have enough, have you created enough proof points that this model can work? And are you measuring your impact? You know, are you really actually doing what, your vision or mission really is. And that's not always easy to figure out at the start. And, you know, most entrepreneurs, you know, there's this valley of death, right? You can start with the idea, and very often in the Philippines, for example, you might get some grants, you join some competitions, and then there's a huge gap until you can actually raise some serious money. And so what do you do in between? And this is this in-between stage where you're trying to really just prove yourself and prove that this model can scale up and you can get more customers. That's the riskiest point in the life of a startup, and especially a social enterprise and impact enterprise that's trying to juggle all these goals. And that's where we come in.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for all of those, Priya. So, I mean, Veligrow is really like a very hands-on early stage idea, maybe incubator. So really like helping these startups, helping these businesses really flourish, really build themselves and provide impact. But can you just know a few of these startups that have been helped or are being helped or supported by Veligrow? Or and are there like specific sectors that like Veligrow is targeting to provide impact on? I mean, how do you choose these startups also?
Yeah, great question. So honestly, you know, when I started out, I was kind of wondering, okay, where do we focus? Because in India, we do have very specific sectors that we work in and we invest in. And in the Philippines, I was wondering if that should be the strategy of, and I started out, like when I first came informally looking in the sector. So for example, health tech was something that we invested very heavily. I was looking for those kind of devices and technologies, and I didn't find any entrepreneurs at that, you know, 5-6 years ago who were doing that. So then we, in the early years, I would say we were quite sector agnostic. So we would work as long as, you know, somebody had a direct social impact, you know, and we were working with a fewer companies. So we worked with a few ed tech companies. We worked with some in the agri space. We worked with some in the affordable housing sector. But over the last few years, we've kind of really been more streamlined. So there are predominantly a few sectors that we work in. Of course, number one, like going back to our gender smart kind of advocacy and policy, we work with women entrepreneurs and or businesses that directly impact women and girls. So that's definitely one big piece of our work. But there are two other sectors that we are very focused on right now. One of them is, of course, the climate space, because all of us have to be thinking about, you know, the climate crisis and what action we can take. So within that, there are two areas that we are focused on. One is, of course, waste and ocean plastic, because that continues to be a big issue, especially, you know, a highly urbanizing part of the world that we are in. And the second is affordable housing. So we really believe that the way that the population is changing and how disaster prone that we are, housing is and shelter tech specifically is an area that, you know, that we focus on. And the last one is really health. And within health, because we have a gender lens, it's really maternal and child health. So we work a lot around sexual and reproductive health rights. We work a lot around, you know, supporting entrepreneurs who are building or addressing sort of maternal health issues. And so we've obviously been supporting a lot of entrepreneurs around this, but of course, we're also looking at under climate regenerative agriculture, which I think is a very, very critical piece if we're going to solve the climate issue, but also addressing poverty, for example, here in the Philippines. So for example, right now, you know, we're just to give you a couple of examples of companies that we are supporting or we have supported in the past. So right now we have about 35 companies, you know, in our portfolio. But in the last few years, that number kind of touches close to 60. So the way that we do it recently is that we do run year-long or half-year-long programs. So people who come into our incubation or acceleration programs and we work with them for a period of time. And then after that, we go to sort of more lower touch. So for those 6 months or 1 year, we go very intense and then we kind of support on an as needed basis. So to give you an example, you know, in the agri space, you know, we support farm to market companies like, for example, Green Habits. It's a Davao or Mindanao based company, which is really trying to help smallholder farmers, you know, in sort of Mindanao in really remote areas access the market, led by a female entrepreneur called Nelvin. So we've been supporting her for a little while. On the climate side, you know, we are very recently we've supported companies like Moss that are really trying to create alternatives to plastic in the food and beverage industry. We're supporting circular companies, a women-led business like Magwai, which are creating reef-safe, you know, beauty care products. Yeah, and so it's really kind of a variety, you know, even in the shelter space, we've worked with Habitat for Humanity and supported companies like Billion Bricks that are building sort of larger settlements with clean energy, or Kubo Modular that are using bamboo to create, you know, small modular homes that are more affordable. So it's, you know, social impact can come, or climate impact can come in many forms. And so these are just a few. Of course, if anybody is interested, can check out our website to see who all. But I would say today, 80% of our portfolio are women-led businesses because of our explicit kind of focus, maybe more than 80 at this point. Because currently we do have two or three programs that are focused on supporting women-led companies, and we also have climate and health programs. So our portfolio also kind of, you know, shapes up in those sectors.
Yes. Speaking of Magwai, so we've actually already interviewed them in the podcast, actually in the, I think last year, so at the very start of the podcast. And I really like what they're doing, really trying to help build a more sustainable country and more sustainable world. If right now there's someone listening who wants to join the Villagrow community, so how can they really join the community? How can they maybe build this connection with Villagrow and maybe get support? So what really is the process for any startup to join the community? And like, I mean, how do you, I mean, what are the most important factors? Like maybe do you look at the idea, the team, the profitability, maybe? I mean, those, the impact, of course. I mean, like, can you just give like a briefer for our listeners who might be interested to join the community?
So we are very excited to always welcome entrepreneurs who are addressing, you know, social impact or climate issues. So, but here are a few things that we really look for. Number one is, of course, you know, that's our first lens. Impact is our first lens. So does the business directly create a social or an environmental impact? Or is it solving a social or climate problem? That's our kind of first lens. But of course, there are, you know, at the early stages, it is very early. So there are other things also that we look at, right? Number one is that does the founder or the founding team, do they really understand the problem that they're trying to solve? So have they gone deep into the problem? Is there a good understanding? And of course, on the solution side, does it seem, you know, viable? So if you've understood the problem well, then more or less, you know, you've developed something that directly addresses that problem. So we are really, when we look at, you know, the idea or the product or the service, we're really looking to understand, you know, does it actually solve the problem that you're seeking to, right? Does the team really understand who is the customer? Who's the customer segment? Is the market size of, you know, for that product or service big, right? Because it's important for us, and we definitely have a vision to support businesses that can really scale up, because we believe the problems out there are very big. So we want, you know, if you start with supporting 10 farmers, you know, we really want to see models that can go to 100, 1,000, a few million farmers, right? So is the market size fairly big enough? Is the problem sort of big enough? And can the solution actually start scaling up? On the business and the revenue model side, of course, we are looking for companies that may not be profitable yet because you've just started out, but there are all the indications that it can become profitable, right? So you have a very clear revenue model, even though you're still testing it, but you have an idea of, you know, who's going to actually pay for this product or service. You have a paying customer. Maybe you haven't figured out all of the pieces, but that's really important to us that the founders are really thinking and demonstrating in some way that, you know, there is a revenue model out there. And very importantly, at the early stages, is who is the team, right? Who is the team? You know, are the founders really, do they really believe in this solution? Do they really feel passionately about this problem that they want to solve? Who's in the team, right? Is it a solo founder? If there are multiple team members, you know, what are their skills? Do they complement each other in terms of skills and maybe styles? But fundamentally, you know, we're really trying to see, do the entrepreneurs or the founding team, do they have the grit? Because it's not going to be an easy journey, you know, to be an entrepreneur. but especially to be an impact entrepreneur, because it's going to be that much harder to go and deliver your product or service, to get the pricing right, you know, to really make sure that you're balancing the profit side as and the impact side. So it's going to take time. So, you know, do we think that they can actually last this journey? And the other side of the team is, are they also mentorable? Because sometimes we do, if you do end up working with those who don't want to take any advice or not very open to feedback, then it kind of becomes challenging to work at the early stages, because a lot of it is going to be iteration. A lot of it is going to be like going back and forth. So, and it's a, that's a difficult one to judge, but hopefully through the conversations that you have, we are able to get a sense. But that's really important to us, that, you know, somebody's open to feedback. So that's, so other than the usual, the problem solution and innovation and the revenue model, business model, the team and who the founder is really, really critical to who we end up selecting. So how can, the other question was, how can you reach out? I think number one is, you know, we are very active on social media, or and through our website, you can always reach out to us. And we do announce programs quite frequently. So please do look out for those announcements. And if you find yourselves eligible, please do. Currently, we have applications open. We're looking to support health sector entrepreneurs, so those who are addressing sexual and reproductive health or working in pandemic epidemic preparedness, but using AI to solve those problems. So we have some rolling applications that are going on, closing very soon. But if you're a woman entrepreneur, then we have support that is outside of our programs as well. We have a community for women entrepreneurs in the Philippines called We Rise. And this is part of a larger Asia-wide community called Nyushu Network, you know, which I launched with my partner who's based out of India. So we have women entrepreneurs from across the region who are part of this community. And we have free resources. We have community events every month. And, you know, we have continuous programs and support available for women entrepreneurs. So any women entrepreneur listening, please do check us out. Write to me personally, or look at We Rise community, and you can join up anytime. But I would also encourage entrepreneurs to, we hold regular startup ecosystem events, both virtually and in person. And, you know, it's a great way to connect with other people working in the space, find people to come and work with you on the team, find co-founders, but also just connect and see what everyone is up to. So I would encourage everyone to come to the events or be part of it. And all of this, you know, we are constantly talking about them on social media, where I'm sure everybody's active. So that's a great way to find. But otherwise, you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, so it's really building the community, I think, for VilGrow and the startups being supported. So maybe if some of our listeners want to join the community, so visit VilGrow's website, social media. But can we ask VilGrow Philippines' vision? I mean, what really do you see in like 10 years, 20 years? How really do you see the transformation or the change to happen in the country, in the Philippines maybe?
Yeah. Thank you for that, actually. I've been thinking about this quite a while, because now, you know, we started out in 2019, and it's been a few years of hard work of building the ecosystem, and definitely things have improved. It's grown, I think, in part thanks to the tech companies that have been growing in the pandemic, the e-commerce and fintech space. And it's a vibrant market, right? After Indonesia, we are the largest sort of startup ecosystem in the region. There's a lot happening. But I think for me personally, what I hope to see and what I think is not happening yet is that we're not very inclusive yet. We, you know, a lot of support is still concentrated around the big cities, mostly Metro Manila. And there are, you know, probably entrepreneurs all around this country may be sitting on some really fantastic ideas, but they don't actually get the support. Many entrepreneurs don't come from, you know, the networks. So the, you know, inherently, all, this is not only the Philippines. I would say this happened in India. It happens in other ecosystems, is that startup ecosystems tend to be in certain silos. And, you know, unless you know somebody or you have the right, you know, last name, or you have, you went to the right school, or you have some connections, it's quite difficult to break into this and, you know, get access to support. So I hope, you know, that's really what I'm really kind of redefining and refocusing Will Grow's work on, is really the inclusivity of the ecosystem. So we are making an effort, for example, to train a lot of incubators who are situated all around the country, you know, TBIs, working with DOST on working with the TBIs, sharing some of our learnings, talking to others about how do we apply a gender lens. I think it's very important for us to really reflect. And I'm hoping that actually International Women's Day's theme this year is about embracing equity. And I think we are not very equitable yet because people come from different backgrounds. It's not that if we just have a program that makes it easy for everyone to access it. We need to take into account, you know, different circumstances, backgrounds of people. And sometimes startup ecosystems are inherently set up in a way that, you know, if you don't have a very fancy slide deck, or you don't speak very well in English, maybe, or, you know, you don't dress a certain way, then somehow you're not, you know, you're not. When you close your eyes and think about an entrepreneur, you know, we're thinking about certain types. So inherently, a lot of conversation is about a certain type of entrepreneur. And that's what I really hope changes. And that's where I, you know, we are going to dedicate, at least for the next 5 years, you know, we're really focused on inclusion and building an inclusive ecosystem. And so one of the strategies around that is also supporting women entrepreneurs, but we're also making internal commitments on how do we diversify even the group of entrepreneurs that we're supporting, right? How many of them we have, you know, a commitment to try and find more entrepreneurs from outside of Metro Manila, for example. So simple things that doesn't cost us so much to do, but it's really about the intentionality and following it up with action. So for me, it's really about over the next 10 years, how do we make the startup ecosystem far more equal, inclusive, so that every or any entrepreneur from any part of the Philippines, any part of Southeast Asia for that matter, can get access to the support, the funding, and can at least have a real shot at building their business. When we get to that, maybe like, then we don't need to exist anymore. you know, that would be the ideal scenario, right? That it is. But I know that that's not, that won't happen because there'll always be a problem to solve. But, you know, we really need to leapfrog from where we are today. It is inherently in small pockets, the support. So we really need to level the playing field so that everyone can take part and take an issue. Because what will happen is after a point, then many people won't consider becoming entrepreneurs because they feel so, there are too many barriers to succeed. Mm-hmm. So I hope that, you know, we can change that. And I hope more people work together. I think it's very important. Startups ecosystems, again, tend to be in silos. You know, we are all focused. We all have, everyone has limited resources and time and effort. So we end up being quite siloed. So we have to collaborate more as well. So over the next 10 years, I really hope that we are building an equitable, inclusive ecosystem. And that means the who we imagine as an entrepreneur changes from somebody who looks like a Silicon Valley entrepreneur only, right? We have all types of entrepreneurs from all parts of this country. That's the dream. That's what we're working towards.
Very, 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 very much agree. These words really hit Priya. So, I mean, it's true. The startup ecosystem in the Philippines right now really needs some rebalancing. I think it's true what you said, that maybe opportunities are not that equally accessible for everyone. And really, inclusivity and equity, or maybe like equal opportunity, those are actually also like what Startup Podcast PH stands for. So helping, or really inspiring, or actually trying to support, trying to help. Hopefully anyone can become an entrepreneur. I mean, anyone, as long as he or she has the guts, I mean, the passion to do maybe impact entrepreneurship. So provide the support, provide the mentorship, provide the networks, provide the resources, help. I mean, because if only a few people in the Philippines become successful entrepreneurs, what's the positive change in that? I mean, hopefully we can really help anyone become an entrepreneur. Do you have any words of wisdom or inspiration for our aspiring impact entrepreneurs? Maybe you want to share some advice to them. Maybe you want to share some words of support or motivation.
Yeah. So I think if you've decided to become an entrepreneur and a social or impact entrepreneur, I mean, you're already taking a bold step. And I'm very encouraged, actually, Ani, to be honest, is that I do see a lot more, especially young people, but also people of all ages, right, wanting to really give back and do something to move things forward, right? They are moved by climate issues, they're moved by the social issues that they see. And, you know, even the pandemic saw a lot of that generosity and that kind of, you know, human spirit. But it's not easy. So I think my advice is that don't think of it as something super short term, because it takes a little bit of time, right? And I think resilience is kind of a big trait that you have to kind of keep building, because, you know, you might fail at the start and it's totally okay. I think you do end up seeing only a lot of, you know, stories of success, but it probably is built on a series of failures, maybe big, some of them small. And so I think that's something that, you know, you have to kind of build up your resilience, even though it might hurt. You know, you may have put all your money and you may have fought with your family to be doing this. And if it doesn't work out, the risk is very high, but don't be disheartened. And even if, you know, maybe your first business idea doesn't work, maybe your second or third will, right? But I think it's important for us to just know that failure is kind of something that we have to accept as we go along. The most important thing is to learn from that and make sure that we don't repeat the same mistakes, right? We learn from the failure of our own failures and the failure of others to keep just, you know, use that as a stepping stone. I think the second thing for social entrepreneurs that I want to say, and those who think, is that I've come across two types. I think one is that you started because of your passion or your dedication to that problem, or you were faced with that problem yourself, or you saw it in your community, or you read about it, something struck you. Sometimes getting this balance of building a profitable company and building, you know, keeping with that mission is difficult. So I do see both sides. Sometimes people just become very obsessed with the issue, which you need to be, but you need to also move beyond it, right? You need to kind of then focus more on the solution and figure out, you need to be obsessed about the problem, but don't let that be a barrier in how you're actually able to scale your model. So because of all the inequity in the ecosystem, I do tend to see that sometimes, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs do kind of stay in that same size or, you know, this, you know, I think important to embrace and kind of dare to imagine. I know it's hard to do without role models, you know, who don't look like you or who don't come from your background, but I think that imagination is required. And you need to dare to imagine, because the problems are just so huge that we are facing today, whether it's climate, whether it's poverty. And I think social entrepreneurship, impact entrepreneurship has the ability to scale because you're blending the business side. And so you have to pay attention to both sides, social side as well as the business side. Don't be afraid of revenue. Don't be afraid of taking, you know, external capital if you have to grow your model, because that is the way you can scale your impact. You have to scale your business to scale your impact. So I think understanding that and building from the start for scale, you know, making those decisions, getting the advice, even if capital is hard to come by, if your vision and your mind is open towards that, I think that's really important. You'll find a way, because being an entrepreneur means that you've taken these risks and you've dared to dream that you can do this. But I would say expand your imagination. A lot of the times I see that, you know, many of these models actually already exist, right, elsewhere, especially in the Indian market, many of the social enterprise solutions that I see. So study them, really look at why they failed or how they pivoted, try to reach out to those entrepreneurs. That's one thing that, you know, we are focusing a lot on, connecting other entrepreneurs who build similar companies. I think that's really important, because you can see that those people may have scaled like to a stage where you didn't even think was possible. So I would say that imagination of scale is really required for us to address the big social and climate issues that face us. We are in a crisis and nobody's going to come to save us. We have to do it ourselves, and we have the ability to do it. And I think, you know, the startup ecosystem hopefully will also evolve to support the entrepreneurs who are daring to dream.
Yeah, expand our imagination and learn from our mistakes and learn from each other. Those are really very insightful advice. For our last question, Priya, is it fun being a social enterprise or an impact incubator, co-founder and CEO or leader? I mean, is it fun like helping all these impact businesses, these impact startups? I mean, how's the feeling being like the mother maybe, or the leader of?
Yeah. Wow, thank you. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've been reflecting a lot in the last few weeks about what this has all meant. You know, it's taken a lot to come, especially to a new country, and to, like, you know, start thinking about, like, contributing to building an ecosystem. You know, being an outsider means first you have to really be empathetic and understand what's happening on the ground. And, you know, I'm nowhere near understanding it fully. But I think for me, it has meant, you know, 5-6 long years of trying to build the ecosystem along with so many other peers who are doing this. There is great joy. I would say that I would never trade it for anything. It's been very, very hard because things sometimes move very slowly. And I'm inherently a very impatient person. So for me, the fact that, you know, the change is quite slow, steady, but it's quite slow, has been quite frustrating. But that's the journey of any entrepreneur, right? I'm an entrepreneur myself in doing this and setting up Will Grow and, you know, setting up this model here. When I came to the Philippines, I didn't know a single person other than my husband. So, you know, I spent a lot of time. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know much about the culture of the country. So I did spend a lot of time really getting to know people, understanding what needs to be done, and slowly by slowly, like, building brick by brick. So it's been a long and very up and down journey, like any other entrepreneur, but I would not trade it for anything. It's what gets me out of bed. And the greatest joy really comes from seeing entrepreneurs all around this country fighting for their dream and, you know, to be able to contribute and help in any small way, I think, is really a privilege, which I won't take for granted. But I have to say, it's, you know, like any entrepreneurs, it's up and down, but there's great joy. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But like any other entrepreneur, any other CEO, it's quite a lonely journey. And, you know, there are many days and nights when I don't sleep. Especially incubator models are not very easy to sustain and build. But there's so much work to be done. So you're always caught and you always constantly feel like you're not doing enough. You know, there's so much more that needs to be done. And how do you do it all? And so you have to find a balance of maybe doing a few things well. But there's all, you know, I keep getting pulled into many things because there's so many pieces of this ecosystem that remains to be built. But it's a gift, and, you know, I'm very, very grateful for it.
Yeah, it's really the journey. So, and I think I agree, it's actually a gift to be an entrepreneur. It's actually a gift to have this passion, this advocacy. I'm really happy, and I'm really first of all, thank you very much, Priya, for sharing all of these words, all of these perspectives. I'm really happy that we have this conversation. I'm really inspired, and I really think all the things that you've said are really meaningful and really inspiring, and actually really very insightful. So yeah, that's all I want to say. Thank you really, Priya, for having this conversation at the podcast. So if our listeners, maybe they want to know more about Will Grow, maybe they want to join the community, maybe they want to talk with you, maybe they want to know you more. I mean, so how can they contact you? How can they contact, or how can they know more about Will Grow?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much again for having me. And it's been such a wonderful conversation. It's always great to reflect. I am, you know, my door is always open. You can find me on LinkedIn. There's only one Priya Thachadi. I have a unique last name, so you'll find me easily. So please do look me up. Do write a message directly to me. I'm, you know, always kind of checking my LinkedIn messages. But you can, you know, go to willgrowphilippines.org, our website. I would say subscribe to our newsletter so you can stay updated on what's happening. For women entrepreneurs, you can join our community. WeRiseCommunity.Asia is our platform. Lots of amazing resources there, but we're very active on social media, so, you know, just do look up and you can, you know, reach out directly to any of our team members. We are always also hosting events, so I do welcome you to join them, whether it's online or in person. But, you know, don't hesitate to reach out. Sometimes, you know, you do wonder and you feel awkward whether you should reach out. Always reach out and build your network, and, you know, in whatever way if we can help, you know, Will Grow Philippines will be there to support your journey.
This is a very wonderful episode. Thank you so much, Priya. Thank you so much for sharing about Will Grow and about your journey, actually, all your thoughts, all your perspectives. So we're very grateful to hear all of this from you. So maraming salamat, Priya, for this conversation. Thank you.
Salamat. Thank you for having me.